Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We have been saying it for a while, and you say it so much, it starts to sound like a cliche, but in this case, I don't think it's cliched whatsoever. We are in an incredibly busy time for UGA recruiting, and frankly, this is one of those moments where busy also feels like exciting, where that conversation of, you know, the last few months of what's wrong with UGA recruiting, boy, nobody asking that right now. Now, a lot of the hay is not yet in the barn for some of this kind of stuff, but there are plenty of potential prospects out there that could certainly change the trajectory of Georgia's 2018 class. The latest name to add to that list is Adam Anderson, the four-star linebacker from Rome, Georgia, who committed to LSU because LSU offered a couple of his teammates, including Jamarcus Chapman. Well, since then, Chapman has decommitted from LSU and committed to Tennessee, raising the question of, would Adam Anderson soon follow suit and have a decommitment of his own from LSU? Well, that has now happened. Now, as I said, this is the kind of thing that we knew was a possibility for quite some time. It's not necessarily unexpected news that Anderson has decommitted from LSU, but it is still exciting news nonetheless. In fact, if you want to go back to, I guess it was Wednesday's edition of Dog Nation Daily, we had on Sam Spiegelman, our colleague from SECCountry.com. Sam has, especially when it comes to LSU recruiting, and I asked him about the situation with Anderson. And what Sam said was kind of interesting, that the scenario with Anderson at that point in time, still an LSU commit, but it was so up in the air, and maybe Anderson wanted to dodge these kinds of questions so much that he actually didn't go to the opening out in Oregon, even though he was invited. Here's how Sam said that on Wednesday.
It almost feels like he's half committed at this time. Now, from an LSU standpoint, Adam Anderson and his teammate Jaquan Griffin are all saying the right things. They're still committed as it stands today. You know, Adam Anderson was invited to the opening. He did not make the trip. And I think part of the reason why is because he knew that he would get overwhelmed with questions. And I feel like he's very undecided at the moment.
So undecided, apparently, that he has at least decided that LSU's not the school for him, and he's going to reopen things back up. Well, obviously, this leads to a fun and very interesting question for Georgia fans. Now that Anderson's no longer a member of LSU's class, and Jamarcus Chapman's no longer there either. He's at Tennessee. Well, does Georgia now stand the best chance of regaining a commitment from Anderson here? After all, he was at one point in time a member of Georgia's 2018 class. And the best I can tell, and we'll talk to Jeff Sintel about this coming up in just a moment, but the best I can tell is the answer to that question regarding Anderson is a solid maybe. Georgia certainly looks to be in a good position here. There has been some chatter about that for quite some time. Unfortunately, though, when it comes to who is also chasing down Anderson, the Dogs are not the only ones, and the other names you're going to hear here are pretty familiar names in terms of schools that Georgia's had to go head-to-head with before and currently going head-to-head with some other prospects. They are some of the big dogs when it comes to Southern recruiting. Here's a little more from Sam Spiegelman laying out exactly what the scenario might be now for Anderson, that he's back on the open market once again.
I know that he's made some visits elsewhere, Georgia, Clemson, Alabama in recent months. I know that people in Georgia believe that a flip will eventually take place, and maybe that has something to do with Jamarcus Chapman leaving the class when LSU added two more defensive linemen earlier last month during camp. They believe that Georgia and Clemson are more in the mix because of the proximity to home, and you know, our colleague Jeff Sintel wrote a great story about Adam and his relationship with his family last year when he committed to the Bulldogs. Now that Chapman is out, you have to wonder whether this trio from Rome, Georgia is going to stick, whether Griffin will join Chapman in Tennessee, whether Anderson opts to stay home to Georgia or to Clemson, maybe even Alabama.
So, yeah, that's obviously the scenario that Sam Spiegelman lays out there. And reminder, that was from Wednesday's episode of Dog Nation Daily, when at that point in time, Anderson was still a commitment to LSU. But as Sam had said, he was also only about half committed. So it was easy to start wondering about some of those other places. And you hear the names Alabama and Clemson mentioned. Now, in the comment section, Hunter Beard, who's watching us on Facebook Live, says Anderson to UGA. And maybe it will be that simple. Maybe Anderson does rejoin Georgia's 2018 class. But if you're a Georgia fan, I think you have to give a little pause here when you hear those two schools mentioned by Sam, Clemson and Alabama, in terms of those looking to get into the mix for Anderson. I mean, after all, when it comes to Alabama, Alabama has been quiet now for quite some time. When people were asking questions about what's wrong with Georgia recruiting, they were really saying some of the same kind of stuff about what's wrong with Alabama recruiting as well. But you knew that Alabama was going to lay dormant for the entire 2018 cycle. You're seeing Alabama already start to wake up from its slumber a little bit here. Won the commitment head-to-head over Georgia for Stephon Wynn with the weekend, and I think they'll be a formidable foe here for Anderson as well. And, of course, you can't count out Clemson in any one of these conversations. Frankly, I know a lot of Georgia fans are getting tired of hearing about Clemson at the moment. But the overall bottom line for me on this entire discussion, though, is that it's kind of nice to be back in the mix here for Anderson. I think he represents a huge position of need for Georgia for a lot of reasons. First of all, that outside linebacker spot, one of those guys who might be able to get to the quarterback for you when he gets on the field, assuming he does end up at Georgia. I mean, this for me is going to be one of those real crucial stats that you look at for Georgia in 2017 and moving forward 2018, 2019, 2020, and beyond. Can you get to the quarterback? Can you sack the quarterback? For a Georgia defense that has been good, not great, just south of great here, going back the last three or four years, the ability to sack the quarterback, I believe, is going to be one of those differentiators that turns a good Georgia defense into a great Georgia defense. And a guy like Anderson certainly makes that a possibility. Plus, for the Georgia fans who want to kind of focus in on, is Kirby Smart recruiting at a national championship level, a player like Anderson becomes a great barometer of just how true that is. I mean, after all, we have to be honest here that Georgia has not gone head-to-head with Alabama and beaten Bama much in recent years for players. But Kirby Smart probably did do that at least a couple of times last year for the class of 2017. I think you could say that about Walter Grant. I think you could say that about D'Angelo Gibbs. You might could say that about a couple other players as well. Also, some examples of that hopefully happening with Clemson. Maybe going head-to-head and winning for Jamari Sawyer, going head-to-head and winning for some other names as well, including, I guess you would have to count Zamir White in that category also. So that's one of the real hallmarks of national championship recruiting. You go up against the other best programs, both offering, you know, committable offers, and you win that situation head-to-head. Maybe that's what George can do here for Adam Anderson. But the overall bottom line, this is an exciting time for the Dogs. A lot of big names back on the market. James Cook decommitting from Florida State. Adam Anderson decommitting from Clemson. Not to mention all the other uncommitted prospects that Georgia seems to be chasing down right now as well. It has quickly turned in terms of the momentum for 2018's recruiting class. At one point in time, it was awful slow. Things have heated up and the pace has quickened rapidly here, and Georgia fans are certainly enjoying the ride. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. It is good to have you with us. Whether you watch us on Facebook Live, of course, we're 10 a.m. on Facebook Live each and every Monday through Friday on the Dog Nation Facebook page. We appreciate you checking that out. We're also on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Always fun to be hanging out with the folks in Athens. And then in podcast form, whether it be posted to your desktop at dognation.com, SoundCloud, iTunes, however you listen to the podcast, thanks for doing that. We think that's a really convenient way to catch up on all things Dog Nation Daily, whether you're working out or you're, you know, at your office, got the earbuds in, you're kind of driving around, whatever you're doing. Well, we appreciate you listening to Dog Nation Daily in podcast form. And by the way, we are getting so excited about the upcoming Dog Nation invasion to South Bend this September. It's going to be a lot of fun, and of course, it's brought to you in part by our friends at Marlowe's, who remind you that if there truly is death by chocolate, I don't mind dying, and I say this all the time. I think Marlowe's has some really fun liners to say, and Marlowe's is a great spot if you have not been there before, but I love their advertising campaign. I think it's a lot of fun to read this stuff here on Dog Nation Daily, and of course, they also want to remind you to be a Marlowe's insider, and you can receive exclusive offers and event invitations. All you have to do, this is super simple, text 24242 today, the word Marlowe's to 24242, and you can become a Marlowe's insider. And by the way, I can't tell you all about this right now, but I will give you a little bit of a hint, a little bit of a clue. We have some really fun stuff coming up with Marlowe's over the course of the next few weeks before the summer's done, including a massive, massive event that I cannot spoil right now because all the details are not yet ironed out, but it's going to be a really fun time for us to all hang out together here coming up in just a few weeks, and there may be something in it for you. We'll talk about that coming up as soon as we can here on Dog Nation Daily. For now, though, time for our Gator Hater Countdown. 112 days between Georgia, Florida, world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville. Of course, we want you to be a part of that with us, our Gator Hater Countdown, by going to shopdognation.com and getting your own Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirt. I think we've got all the sizes still in stock. We've been restocking this thing a bunch to make sure that we keep everybody satisfied and taken care of, including the bigger size, which I know we were running low on for a while. We've got those there for you now, so check that out. Also, we'll give you free shipping on those if you check out shopdognation.com. That's true for the Gator Hater t-shirts and really all your Dog Nation needs. You can get it right there at shopdognation.com. All right, Jeff Sintel coming up in just a moment here on Dog Nation Daily. We'll do all the Adam Anderson stuff with him, including the latest as well on Justin Fields, James Cook, and everything else. It'll be a busy conversation coming up with Jeff Sintel. It's good to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily. For now, hope you enjoy a look at recruiting with our buddy Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And, of course, it has been quite a whirlwind for Jeff Sintel, getting back from Oregon and all the news that's happened. And, by the way, Jeff, if you thought the recruiting war, and I know you know this already, but if you thought the world of recruiting was going to slow down just because the opening was over, I guess we all have another thing coming, because when you get back to this week, you got major decommitment from James Cook, major decommitment from Adam Anderson, and boy, this board for Georgia in terms of its 2018 class, it has shifted mightily in the last few days, right?
It has, but it's a good thing that if you're a nose-to-the-grind recruiting reporter, that neither one of those circumstances comes as a surprise to somebody that's been reading Dog Nation, I might imagine.
Well, that's certainly true. We've noticed the same thing ourselves here. And if you don't mind, let me start with the Adam Anderson stuff. Is it as simple as saying now that he's gone from LSU, he's just going to fall right back into Georgia's lap? Or do we have to take serious the pursuit of Alabama here, maybe even the pursuit of Clemson? That's a couple of the schools that we've heard mentioned by our colleague Sam Spiegel, and brought those up earlier in the week here on Dog Nation Daily. I mean, where do you kind of put Georgia in comparison to an Alabama or maybe a Clemson for Anderson at the moment?
Well, I think Anderson really wants to find some sense of location. Is big for him. I mean, he wants to stay close to his family. He's also got a younger brother that he signs with. He has a sign. He has a special enabled needs younger brother, and he's probably about the only 4-star I know, or the nation's number one outside linebacker, that has 150 word vocabulary in sign language.
Wow.
So he's a guy that will, I think, stay close to his roots in Rome. Now, I also will kind of mix in another school, just because everybody likes more complications with recruiting pictures. I do think Tennessee might have a little bit of a chance at an official, because that's where Jamarcus Chapman is going, his close friend. And those two are usually attached at the hip whenever I see them at showcases or combines or at all-star events and things of that nature. Those two guys are pretty close. But, you know, I think it's Alabama, Georgia, and Clemson, and I think Georgia has not relented in its pursuit of Anderson since that decommitment. And they're like I said last night on social media, I think Georgia's looking for the recommitment or the re-up for Adam Anderson. And I think those chances are pretty good for him to come back and stay in state.
It's funny that you bring up Tennessee here, because I actually read something about that at the forum, forum.dognation.com, and one of our posters had talked about the work that Brady Hoke is doing as the as kind of a recruiter for Tennessee's defense right now. And I thought it was an interesting post, but I didn't know how seriously to take, you know, Tennessee, because if you want me to just be completely honest, a lot of the work that Tennessee has been doing in Georgia lately has been with players that I don't know necessarily even had an offer from Georgia, certainly weren't getting serious consideration from Georgia. So I didn't know how serious to take Tennessee when it comes to Adam Anderson, but it sounds like you're giving a little respect to the Vols here.
Yeah, a little bit, because, I mean, that's location to Rome, and, you know, Tennessee is not that far away. It's certainly a lot closer than LSU and Baton Rouge. And, you know, I think Anderson's decision, you know, he's a guy that I can see him committing 3 weeks from now and just being done with it. I can see him taking a lot of time. He's a guy that, you know, I'm going to just laugh at this, Brandon. He's a guy that sits there and goes, hold on, I don't have to sign until February?
Yeah.
I don't understand what all the fuss is about. Why do I need to be in a hurry? Why do I need to visit these schools? Why do I need to declare a new top five or a new leader or anything else like that? This is a young man that I think has always tried to keep his recruiting as sort of close to 1995 or maybe 2005 as he possibly can. I mean, he was invited to go out to the opening and then just decided it wasn't the thing for him. He didn't need to go out to Oregon for 4 or 5 days and be away from home and show the world that he was already a pretty good linebacker when he's already rated as the nation's number one outside linebacker anyway.
Yeah, that is a great reminder that in a lot of cases, people like me are in a lot bigger hurry for these kids than these kids are for themselves. That's probably a pretty important reminder to mention every now and then. And speaking of being in a hurry, a lot of us are in a hurry to find out what's going on with Justin Fields. But Fields is another guy who may be kind of content to at least take his time a little bit. Let me separate fact from fiction here a little bit, get some thoughts from you. First of all, is it true that the only publicly known about scheduled visits for Fields right now is the trip he's going to take to Auburn? I believe it's on July 13th, and the visit to Georgia, which I think I've heard a couple different dates for this, but it's very, very close after the Auburn visit. Those are the only two sort of scheduled revisits we have on the books for Fields right now. Is that true, first of all?
Yeah, that's true. And I think, first of all, people get confused by the dates because I see 16 to 17 out there and 15 out there. You know, Justin's going to visit. He's going to stay overnight. So that's where you get like 16, 17 or 15, 16 in there. The latest confirmation I've gotten from a source close to Fields is that the visit will take place on the 15th. That's July the 15th. So that's the situation where Georgia's going to kind of bring all the King's horses and all the King's men in on that recruiting visit right there, and that's a chance. You know, Georgia's going to also have a big visit from a pretty good looking wide receiver by the name of Jamar Chase, whose name was in the headlines over the last week, considering his commitment to TCU or LSU or what would have happened there. Jamar Chase is actually expected to visit on July 15th as well. Georgia's going to have a couple of recruiting weekends or events, not like dog night, but maybe like a mini dog night, like a jam session, not the big orchestra, not the big, you know, theatrics of what dog night used to be. But they're going to have some targeted, specific big recruiting visit weekends in July. I wouldn't be surprised if Zamir White found his way into Athens for one of those weekends as well, maybe even that July 15th weekend.
Okay, how about that? That's really interesting news. But on the field situation, I know there's been a lot of debate about this on the forum and other spots. If you've got the visit to Auburn coming first, the visit to Georgia coming second, I get the impression that most Georgia fans like the idea of being able to make the pitch after Auburn. It's almost like in baseball, the home team getting to bat last. Is that the full-on consensus from you, though? I mean, is Georgia in the better position in comparison to Auburn here in terms of getting to make its offer or, you know, pitch to Fields, the showcase of campus, doing that after what Auburn gets a chance to do?
Well, Brandon, first of all, I admire your CSI visitology, what you're trying to do here. I think most, when you try to read into it maybe a little bit too far, I've heard theories and I've heard people speculate and bounce that off me. If, okay, he's visiting Auburn and he's visiting Georgia, those are the two set dates. You got to remember, those are also the two closest schools. And there's one theory going out there that if Fields visits Georgia on the 15th and 16th, and he's there and he has a great visit, then he doesn't need to do any more visits, then he might call the ball right there. I just think Florida and Florida State will probably also get visits at some point, unless the Georgia visit or the Auburn visit goes so well. You also got to remember the timing here with Matt Corral a little bit. Georgia has asked Matt Corral to come in on July the 25th. That's a full 10 days after Justin Fields would make his visit, or at least 9 days after he would make his visit to Georgia. That might give Justin Fields a lot of time to think. And like I've said before on this live stream and on your podcast, Brandon, and on our podcast, I think if Justin Fields is not committed by the time of that Matt Corral visit, things will get very interesting. And maybe if this was a poker hand, we might even have a tell. Because if Matt Corral doesn't commit to Georgia while he's visiting on July the 25th, that's a clear sign to me that Georgia feels very good about where they're at with Fields, because they can't lose both of these five-star quarterbacks. I've said before that I do think Georgia will get one or the other between Matt Corral and Justin Fields. That's something that, you know, dog fans have to really appreciate, because considering what they already have in the quarterback room with two five-stars already, and the ability, which I see, is they're going to get one of these guys maybe later, maybe not sooner. I think one of these two five-stars will eventually pledge and become a part of the class in 2018 as well. And I know Georgia fans out there are kind of wishing, are kind of hoping that things go a certain way with Fields, but That month of July will be very interesting in terms of what comes out of both visits going forward.
I want to ask about what Fields told you about silent commitments coming up, but let me squeeze in one more thing about the visits thing here before we talk about that. And listen, people know, I mean, my story. I obviously don't want Justin Fields to go to Florida. I mean, I'd love for Fields to come to Georgia, but at the very least, I don't want him to go to Florida. And so I took it as good news, what I read recently, that if he visits Florida, it may not come until September. I mean, for me, Jeff, that reminds me an awful lot of what the girls told me in high school. I'll go to prom with you maybe next year. You know, it's one of those things where, like, September sort of never comes because he's committed to somebody before then. So I kind of took it as good news that if there's another visit coming to Florida for Fields, it's not coming until the season has already started. That sort of seems like the kind of visit that never actually gets there.
You know, you got to look, you step back and look big picture at this, Brandon. And come on, man. You didn't have to have anybody put you off until September, man. Come on. You laid that voice on that young lady, and she was like ready to go to the Milli Vanilli concert or something like that with you. But what I will say there is, I think with Justin, look at the big picture with Justin, first of all. He was committed to Penn State. His family took a couple of those trips out to Penn State, and they realized the commute there. They realized how hard it would be to get to Justin, how hard it would be for the family to get to Justin. So I think Florida and Florida State, even though they're like 5-6 hour trips and they're nothing, you know, superhuman about what it takes to do, Auburn and Georgia are a lot closer. And I think those would be the most convenient checkdowns for his decision. And, you know, Brennan, there just seems to be a lot of momentum for Georgia right now with Justin Fields. That's as simple as I can say that.
And, boy, that's music to the ears of a lot of Georgia fans. And one sort of, like, I guess, you know, circumstantial piece of evidence that sort of supports what you just said is what Fields said to you about being a silent commitment. Now, he's pretty good about playing things coy. You know, he doesn't really show a lot of, you know, emotion about a lot of this, or he doesn't really give you much of a lean, at least publicly. I know back at the opening, again, I talked about, you know, not really having a leader, not really knowing what he wants to do. But I thought it was kind of telling, Jeff, that when you asked him about the notion of being a silent commitment, and you know what everybody says in the message boards about that when it comes to a Fields, there's a lot of that kind of talk out there. Fields did not pretend to not know what a silent commitment was and expressed the sort of pros and cons of doing that. And I thought it was kind of interesting. That was a moment when he at least acknowledged that, you know, and people can joke about what a silent commitment even means, but whatever it means in sort of modern-day recruiting, Fields knew what it meant and acknowledged that, hey, you know, there's a potential good thing about that. And that's only going to ignite even more chatter from Georgia fans in these forums where they pop up and speak to each other.
Yeah, you know, and Brandon, let me try to be as transparent as I can here. You know, if you talk to other recruiting writers, the guys that cover Auburn, the guys that cover Florida and Florida State, they all express sentiments that they think that Justin Fields will eventually choose them. And, you know, hey, this is the guy that writes for a site that covers Georgia, kind of conveying the same things. I don't know whether that's to drive readership. I don't know whether that's what their sources are telling them, that sources at each of these schools are saying, I think we're going to get that Fields kid, get excited. But, you know, to me, I just look for I think I use this word a lot. I call them tent poles or entanglements or attachments. There's the location there for Georgia. There's his sister's aspect there playing at Georgia in softball. There's also guys like Josh Vann, guys like Luke Ford, guys like Kearis Jackson. All of these guys, if he's looking to bring guys along to play with him, they're not really high candidates at Florida or Florida State or Auburn right now. So that's just a way when you're trying to just sift through everything and just kind of try to present a reasoned and calculated logic in this illogical, unstable world of college football recruiting. I just see more drawing cards to Georgia right now with Fields. Now, could that stuff change? Could other schools come up with something new? That is always possible. But the main things he's always said is relationships with the coaches and academic fit and what his family wants him to do. Those are three, I think, those are the three cogs of the engine that will drive the Justin Fields decision. And, of course, Georgia has 2 5-star quarterbacks coming in. I hear this all the time. Why in the world is Justin Fields going to go to Georgia when he can play right away at a Florida, when he can play right away at an Auburn? when he can possibly play right away at a Florida State. And then those things all match up. Those are clear football examples. But the other things I'll mention is this is going to be different with Justin Fields. He plans, the last time I spoke to him, which was a couple days ago, the last time he said something on this matter is he plans to play high school baseball. That means no early enrollment. I don't think in this modern age of college football, no kid, no young man, no matter how talented that arm is, thinks that they can show up in June and win a starting job at a big boy school like all these schools that he's considering right there.
That's a good point.
The fact that he's not enrolling early, to me, shows that his 2018 season, he doesn't need to play right away. That was the same situation he was kind of looking at with Penn State maybe up there as well. He doesn't need to play right away in 2018 because he knows that he's not enrolling early. He's not immersing himself in the playbook to win a job in 2018. And, you know, that's something to say right there because, I mean, you know, the other thing Georgia fans can think about when they try to rally their hopes up in the month of July here, Georgia has two quarterbacks total scholarship, period. That's a huge drawing card. The second is they have no dual threats. I mean, you could really, you know, Brendan, the thing I want to make sure people remember about Justin is he was basically an all-time quarterback, like two-hand touch, like we used to play back in the day. He didn't move around in the pocket. He was basically playing the part of a Jacob Eason and playing the part of a Jake Fromm at the opening. He did very well there. One of his strongest tools was kind of kept in the toolbox. Those are his legs. That's that 4.51 laser time speed in the 40. He never had to break that out. He was never allowed to break that out. And when you look at what Fields did, everybody's going to read those quotes. I printed them about Trent Dilfer, that he's the most prepared, he's the most polished, he's an all-time Elite 11 quarterback. This is what I'll say there that just kind of ground the hype train a little bit about Justin Fields. Eason and Fromm, not even Trevor Lawrence, none of those guys had crammed to win at 7-on-7 quite like Justin Fields has. He went through the Cam Newton 7-on-7 season. He went through the Rivals 5-star challenge, and then he came to the opening. He had two really big tune-ups to get ready to dominate at the opening, and that is exactly what he did.
Really good stuff, Jeff. That's outstanding intel. Let me, if you don't mind, really quick, try to knock off a couple other names here. You're obviously much closer to all this than I am. You report the news. I simply follow it. But as a person who follows this news pretty closely, really one of the most surprising developments for me this year has been the way that things have gone with James Cook, who has seemingly gotten closer and closer to Georgia by the moment. At the opening, he essentially eliminated everybody but Florida State and Georgia, I believe, and then shortly after that, decommitted from Florida State. I mean, if you're following the math equation here, it would seem like that Georgia's the only team left standing. Is it that simple for the Dogs and the brother of Dalvin Cook here?
Yeah, I think it is that simple, man. He's told me that the only two schools that was chasing him, that were still in it, was Georgia and Florida State. Now, I don't know if a quick commitment will come. I don't know if a public commitment will come. But I know he's going to enroll early. His final decision will probably be announced in December at the latest, so he can enroll in January. He's just told me matter-of-factly, when I was up there with Oregon with him, he told me matter-of-factly that this would be over, this race would be done, if not for how well Georgia had been recruiting him. And it was basically down to Georgia and Florida State. I think these are my words here. These are my thoughts. These are my speculation here. I think that the Florida State decommitment happened so he could kind of freely visit Georgia over the summer and make sure that's a cozy fit, especially in the month of July when all the other heavy hitters might be coming in, like Justin Fields, like Matt Corral, and everything else like that. I think that that is a way where Florida State said, if you're going to make these visits and take these visits, you have to do it as a decommit, and we'll go about our business from there. I just really think that's what's happening with James Cook. And again, Brandon, I got a huge thing to think about here. I haven't even written about this at all. But Georgia fans love to know about what perspective and how big things are and, you know, what would be great about the 2018 class. I'm doing my research right now, man, about the possibility of this. Brandon, can you think of any school that has signed the nation's number one dual threat quarterback, the nation's number one running back, and then the nation's number three running back? That, to me, sounds like the greatest backfield in modern recruiting history in terms of, I mean, the only thing you can get is the nation's number one quarterback and the nation's number two running back. That's the only way you can one-up the current kind of trinity that Georgia's trying to put together there in 2018. And that's why I've kind of steadily moved up my thoughts about Georgia's class to where I think this class right now, as it's kind of assembling and will assemble, can kind of easily be a top five class and might even push for the number two or number three class in the nation once again.
Can you believe we're there after where I thought we were, you know, only just really a few weeks ago? And the other thought that I'll bring up, Jeff, is if Coach Dooley is listening to us right now, what you just described, all of a sudden he may go look to see if he still has a pair of coaching shorts in the closet, may see if he can find one of those Georgia coaching shirts. He may want to come out of retirement if he sees that backfield coming into Athens.
You remember when Vince, growing up, he would see a breakaway tailback like a Lars Tate, and he'd have that white shirt and red tie and those silver pants, and he'd be jumping and running along
no
the sidelines with a, you know, I think Billy's got one more of those jumps in it. Maybe somebody in the 2018 class can maybe get him to jump like that, maybe in the skybox or something like that.
All right, let me squeeze in really one quick final point. You're always generous with your time. We appreciate that. Jamari Sawyer only added to his legend at the opening, it sounds like.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, you want to sit there and say something silly on Twitter, but you got to remember this is real world stuff. But, you know, Jamari Sawyer is a guy that you want walking down a dark alley with you. He's guy that maybe makes you feel a little bit safer about North Korea, the fact that he lives in Georgia and he lives in America. But, like, man, this is what I love about Jamari Sawyer. He has all the rankings. He has all the laurels. But Jamari Sawyer actually lost a rep, at least one rep, at the opening. And he was kind of like the biggest dog there, the best guy there. And what he did after he lost that rep is he adapted, he saw what got him beat, and he simply annihilated, eviscerated, destroyed, laid waste, demolished the next three men that were placed in his path because he fixed his error, and he also got really mad, and he also had to show dominance in that savage pit down there at the opening. He's a guy that he's simply the best offensive line prospect on the interior that I've ever seen in all my years of covering high school football players.
Jeff, just outstanding stuff, almost more than we could even keep up with, at least in terms of on our end. You're just absolutely delivering it, top-notch form and fashion. We appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily. Always fun to have you in the program. Hope you've got a great weekend coming up, and we'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Take it easy, Brandon. Grill some meat, sir.
Yes, sir. All for you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, you're talking about just loaded with information. The stuff from Jeff Sintel there, just absolutely. If you're trying to take notes, you filled up an entire 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper with that one. First of all, don't you just love the fact, and you heard this from Jeff at the end of the interview there, but don't you just love the fact that offensive lineman versus defensive lineman, you know, contest at the opening takes place, what's known as the Savage Pit? I mean, is that not the greatest description in the world for these linemen going head-to-head against each other? Really fun stuff. And how about also the possibility of Jamar Chase being in Athens at the same time as Justin Fields for that Fields visit? The Chase story is kind of an interesting one, and we weren't planning on talking about this, but it pops up in what Jeff said there. And he was supposed to decide between LSU and TCU on the NFL Network the other day. NFL Network didn't have its act together and basically ran out of time on its broadcast. That caused Chase to sort of rethink his decision. Well, maybe I'll just postpone my announcement. NFL Network wants him to come back, but maybe one of the reasons that Chase is postponing is because he wants to consider some other schools. Maybe even Georgia, if the scenario is really changing that much with Justin Fields. That'll be fun to watch. For now, though, let's do your SEC through. Of course, it's brought to you by SECCountry.com. And, you know, a few of the stories to kind of get to here a little bit. First of all, Bob Shoup, the Tennessee defensive coordinator, we've been following this for a while. So he says that he was fired by Penn State. Now, the backstory on all this is he had a contract. He's the defensive coordinator. Tennessee goes up to Penn State, pulls Shoup, makes him a hire. I sit on SEC Country Live this week. I think that's actually the sort of the shrewdest move that Butch Jones has made since being Tennessee coach is getting Bob Shoup. I think he's probably a really good defensive coordinator. I think it is. If Stoops can, or I should say, if Jones can stay at Tennessee, at a certain point, Shoup is going to be a good coordinator there in Knoxville. And this is just more of an example of, you know, there's so many opportunities for the Big Ten to say, hey, we're just like the SEC. But one area in which the Big Ten is not really matching wits with the SEC when it comes to stealing coaches. Wisconsin's essentially a feeder school for the SEC. Bielema goes to Arkansas. Dave Aranda goes to LSU. You've got Tennessee going up to Penn State and getting Bob Shoup. The SEC just plays a more full contact brand of the sport when it comes to stealing assistants. So obviously Penn State's mad about that. They want their contract money back from Bob Shoop. They say they owe it to him based on the sort of rigid reading of the contract in terms of how it's been paraphrased in the media. Sounds like Penn State's probably right about this. The one thing I know for a fact of, Penn State did not fire Bob Shoop. If it had, that would have been all over the news. I don't think this happened. I think this is just his way of kind of trying to negotiate a settlement here through the courts, maybe having to get out of maybe the $900,000 he owes them. But I think the overall takeaway here, though, is, you know, coaches are all the time telling players to honor their commitment and be a man of your word and don't go back on what you've said, be someone we can trust. Yet these coaches do this stuff all the time. Now, I don't fault Shoop necessarily for trying to, you know, hold on to as much of his own money as he can. But listen, I mean, at a certain point in time, these contracts have to be taken at least a little bit seriously. I don't know why Shoop is the only coach who's ever having to deal with this, but at a certain point in time, we have to say, are these contracts or are they not? Are these binding or they're not? And if they're binding, then Shoop probably owes Penn State some money. Speaking of binding contracts, Arkansas has one of those to have a home-and-home series with Notre Dame. 2020, I believe, is the game in South Bend. 2025, I think it comes back to Fayetteville. And, you know, obviously, the one thing that you have to admit here, and most of my audience, I would say, is probably pro-playoff, glad to have a playoff in college football. I know there's some old guard folks in college football who maybe like it better the way that it was. The one thing you have to acknowledge here, and I just think this is objectively true, that the arrival of the playoff has sort of also ushered in a brand new era of scheduling here. And I just think that overall, college football schedules look better now. Arkansas and Notre Dame playing each other in a home-and-home environment. Would we have gotten that before the college football playoff? You know, I don't know that we necessarily would have. And in this case, I think you got to thank the playoff for giving you the kinds of head-to-head series that we're all going to enjoy, whether it be Arkansas, Notre Dame, Georgia, Notre Dame that's going to be played this year and then in 2019, and all these other games, Auburn, Clemson, Florida, Michigan. You're getting a lot of these non-conference games now. The schedules around college football look a whole lot better than they used to, and I think the college football playoff has to kind of be thanked for that, so we will thank them for that. A couple other quick stories we'll give you here in the SEC through. Dennis Dodd has Kevin Sumlin on the hottest of all seats when it comes to SEC coaches. That'll obviously be a big subject next week at SEC Media Days. I think that's probably true entering the season. Overall, though, I think that Kevin Sumlin may be one of those coaches who are kind of in questionable statuses at their current job. I think Sumlin may actually answer some of those critics with a pretty good season this year. I expect that Kellen Mond kind of arrives as the freshman quarterback starter there for the Aggies, and I think eventually he'll probably have a pretty good year. And by the way, one more thing for our SEC through. SEC Media Days obviously begins on Monday. There's going to be like 30 hours of television coverage of this on the SEC Network. I'm sure you'll watch some of that. But I also want to encourage you to watch SEC Country Live. Next week at 3 p.m., we're going to do a big, big profile for SEC Media Days. All our experts on the scene there in Hoover, we'll have them on the show, whatever the various coaches say, including Georgia coach Kirby Smart. We'll have all that for you on SEC Country Live next week. And then, of course, some extra broadcasts as well, focusing on each and every team, including Georgia during the week. Kirby Smart, when he speaks, we'll have all that for you in a very special broadcast with SEC Country Live coming up next week. So please make sure you're a part of that. It's all brought to you by Bud Light, and it is going to be a bunch of fun, and we'll make that your SEC through. All right, as we wrap up today, thought there was, and wrap up the week too, I guess, thought ESPN.com had a pretty interesting piece. Speaking of SEC Media Days, where a lot of coaches are going to be asked a lot of questions, the one burning question that ESPN has for Georgia, this is one of those series where they kind of give you a burning question about each SEC school. The one burning question they gave for Georgia obviously involves quarterback Jacob Eason and whether or not the Georgia passing game is going to be more dynamic this year. And I would imagine if you want to start really looking ahead to next week in SEC Media Days and the questions that Kirby Smart's going to be asked, I got to think the majority of those questions do center around, and by majority I mean more than 50%, center around how do you get better on offense. Luckily for Georgia, the defense may be something of a given at the moment. You got a lot of guys who have the potential for all SEC years. You trust that defense. Offense, there's some skepticism. And Kirby Smart will have to deal with that in Hoover, Alabama for SEC Media Days next week. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.